Hi, my name's Don Hughes.
Hi, I'm Kylie.
Hi, I'm Mary Michon, and you're listening.
And you're listening
to your Midwest Garden
Podcast.
Mike, before we get started on today's show, I have a little tidbit for you.
How big is a tidbit?
Do you know what a tidbit is?
Heck no.
Well, it's just a little bit of information that will enlighten you forever and ever, not really.
Oh, is this going to be kind of like a little gossip scene?
No, this is almost like housekeeping segment that I used to call.
Okay.
Now it's tidbits. You know how we always once in a while throw a song lyric into one of our talks.
Yeah.
And then when you try to guess who it is or whatever.
Yeah.
So I bring this up because we talk a little music in theory there. Sir Brian May is doing his part for the environment. I found this on the internet. I thought it was interesting. Did you know in 2013, Brian May, he plays in Queen.
He's a guitarist, right?
Yes.
With the poofed hair.
Yes.
All right.
He bought 157 acres of land that was about to be developed into buildings. He planted trees with the help of volunteers and restored it back to a thriving woodland. The area is now called May's Woodland and has over 100,000 trees growing in it. So,
really?
Brian May.
I'm really impressed.
Great job. So,
instead of barking about it, people, you got to do something.
Put his money where his mouth is for a change.
I'll be done. What do you mean for a change?
Well, not for him, but you know, a lot of these movie stars and music stars want you to do something.
Yeah, but they're not going to
XX cause, but yet they don't put any money into it.
I'm going to leave the country.
But Brian has done it, so thank you, Sir Brian.
He not only walks the walk,
but he talks the talk, and he walks.
And
the
he walks
walk.
The walk. Yeah, see, I'm dyslexic.
Me too.
Are you really?
I'm sorry, to me. Anyway, today's show is about the Lenten rose. When a rose is not really a rose, as I called it in the title. But it's,
I got a bit of trivia.
Well, the Lenten rose, let's get this straight off, is all really right. Not.
It's not a rose.
But what's its real name? That's a Lenten rose. It's just kind of like...
Well, the irony here, do you want to be technical? Because I didn't think we were going to be technical in these podcasts.
Well, it's got a real name.
Well, it's a helleborus.
Excuse you, what's your language?
Oh, it's a heckaborus.
A helleborus will work.
All right. But I got something for you.
Yeah, hit me.
All right. Now, they're nicknamed the Lenten rose because... Now, do you have any idea there? Let's go on with this first of all. And then
we obviously timed this out to be an Easter show, so I'm going to say because the Lenten rose and Easter have a relationship here.
They're an early bloomer. I mean, they're like a late winter, early spring bloomer when the conditions are right. They like the sun, dappled sunlight. Now, what does dappled mean? It means on and off, on and off, on and off, on and off. Well, all right. You know, but they can grow in full sun also. So what's on the internet is best for you to go ahead and say, I'm going to question it and talk to the guys over there at your Midwest Garden Podcast, because they basically will grow under most part shade, full sun conditions. They will not tolerate the extreme heat though. And that, but see, the real thing that I wanted to bring to your attention while we were looking up, clematis last, what was it? When, whatever. We
last
did,
show, yeah.
Last show. Did you know that they are basically from the Ranunculaceae family?
The buttercup?
You are dangerous.
Buttercup.
Yes. And what else is there that's in the buttercup family, the Ranunculaceae?
I don't know.
The clematis.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I thought that's what you said already. I'm
did
sorry.
I already say it?
I wasn't listening, apparently.
Okay. For those of you who were listening... It's related to the clematis, which both of those are related to the buttercup. Now, you don't have to, understand the Ranunculaceae or the Latin terminology for it, but it's basically, and there's another thing you probably don't know.
It's a lot I don't know.
What do you define as an evergreen plant?
You mean like junipers or Christmas trees or pine trees or, you know, that type of all green all year round.
All year round. Yeah. Did you know that the Lenten rose is an evergreen also?
The Lenten rose, the hellebores is a...
Watch your mouth.
I pulled that one already. That is an evergreen tree or it's evergreen not a tree. Family member?
It's the leaves will constantly be green throughout the wintertime.
Yeah, I read that, but I never put those two together.
Well, you know, you don't have to have a conifer or Christmas tree to be just the evergreen. There's rhododendrons, which is an evergreen. There's holly, which is an evergreen. I mean, azaleas, they are evergreens too. But, I mean, it doesn't, those are all bushes. And then you go into the trees. Nobody ever really thought of perennial flower being an evergreen. Now, there's mallow, which is an evergreen also, and that's considered to be a wild plant. Just the other day, somebody such as Scott Sandstrom had a customer that was asking about wild lettuce. And now, being that the standard lettuce is not an evergreen, the wild lettuce is. And they asked if you could save the seeds and have them grow. Well, they will grow if you culture them properly, but the problem is they're perennial also. It's going to take quite a few years for those seeds to basically show any signs of development for it. But we're going to get back into the hellebores. You've done your research. My question to you is, why is it called the Lenten rose again?
Because it's historically related to Easter, and then it's related to being the symbol of serenity and tranquility.
Well, I'll be darned. You did do your homework. But then there's also...
There's also what?
It represents scandal and anxiety.
Oh, there's more?
It's kind of like if you were Catholic, you know, what do they call it? The Stations of the Cross, the anxiety that Jesus Christ went through on his way to being crucified. The anxiety is also part of it for the people surrounding him. And being very, very, you know, depressed and anxious because it's, you know, an ultimate death if they think about it until the risen. And that happens 3 days after he's buried.
So this is a symbol of many things, which is interesting because a lot of the reading I did had a lot of oxymorons to it.
Oh, now you want to give us one?
Well, not right now.
Okay.
Let's get deeper into it where I found a couple of oxys.
What do they use it for? And when I say they, what can you or what do you use it for?
Lenten rose?
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you use it? I mean,
you can use it as an individual plant if you'd like to.
Well, yeah, but I mean, most people just use it or want it because it's one of the earliest bloomers.
With crocus?
Right. And it will do it in snow.
Yes, provided it has the sun.
Yes.
It doesn't. I mean, you know, you don't have to, you don't know if it's going to do that if there's 2 feet of snow down there because you're not going to see it. But then shortly afterwards, but they love well-drained soil, but they also, and here comes the oxymoron, they like to drink water a lot.
Oh.
So, I mean, if you have well-drained soil, you're not going to have a lot of water there. So do you water them in the middle of the late winter, early spring? I wouldn't. I'd let them take their own course.
Yeah, you just let nature do its thing.
Of course.
Wasn't there to make the dang thing.
That's right.
I mean, they're one of the first bloomers.
Right.
And they're kind of they're basically a cold weather plant. They bloom from, I'm going to call it February until when do you think?
It depends on what the season's like. It goes all the way up to the end of May, middle to the end of May. But you're not necessarily going to see any blooms again until sometimes in the fall. Want to know how you stimulate them to bloom for you?
A second time? A second bloom?
Yeah, usually.
Very limited, I assume.
They are limited, but there's tricks of the trade that you can do.
What do you do?
You prune it. One thing, you get rid of the older established foliage. I mean, you're going to get some that's going to be scorched or some that's going to be a little diseased and that sort of thing.
I did read something about pruning back the blooms right after they're done.
Deadheading
right
them.
Right after they're done, yes.
Deadheading them.
Yep.
And that's going to stimulate multiples. I mean, you could leave it alone and let it take its own course. The other thing that's going to be noticeable, you've got English gardeners, people that like to go and get into the mud, dig out a plant, separate it or split it, and then go and drop it somewhere else. Now, as soon as you're done doing that, that stimulates new blossom. I would definitely not pull. Do not pull any of the old leaves off when you're doing the pruning. You use a sharp and clean pruner or pruning scissors. And then what you do is you make sure that you don't take too much away. Now, there's a central crown in there. I'd leave that alone. Right in the center, if you look straight down, it's how the plant basically goes horizontally. And the flowers are going to come up from the crown. I don't really want you to do any damage to the crown itself. So just prune out the established older leaves. If you see some that got a little scorched from last year's season, summer, whatever you want to call it, or heat, yeah, cut those out. It's going to stimulate new growth for the leaf, but it also is going to stimulate new blossom. And that, I mean, I don't know how many blossoms you're going to get, but here's my question to you. If you did your research, why is it that it's called the rose? Because that flower, when it's fully open, doesn't look anything really like a rose.
If I remember right, and this is the cool part about this plant that, and how, and we're kind of jumping to how people use it. Because first of all, let's get one characteristics done here is for people that are interested in maybe going out and getting a hellebore's plant, they get about up to 2 feet tall and they'll spread about 2 feet wide. Okay. But the answer to your question is the blossom at first hangs upside down before it opens.
Cool.
Am I on the right track?
You're going the right way.
Okay, so when it's hanging upside down, it looks like a rosebud, a tight rosebud.
Bravo. That's why they call it the Lenten rose.
And then when it goes to bloom, tilts up towards the sun.
Yeah.
And it opens up. The cool thing about all of this is that when they look like a rosebud down, a lot of people will plant these on hillsides because as you're walking, I'll say underneath it, beside it, underneath it, those blooms that haven't opened yet are hanging down, or if they're just starting to peak before they tilt up, you get a beautiful view as you're walking.
They are pretty.
Looking up.
Now you said on the hillside, are you talking individually or are you talking to, I mean, is this a ground cover you can create with it?
You can do, well, yeah, I mean, you can do either way, but I think it would look cool as a ground cover.
So you can, the best way to do that, I mean, you can go and buy it. I don't have a deep pocket, but you can split it. After about the third year, you can pop it out of the ground, use your hands to split the plant itself, and then put it in different areas in like you said, the hillside. It, first of all, will help to prevent erosion, but then secondly, like you said, it's a beautiful flower, beautiful waxy leaf. That promotes people to stare at it and wonder what in the heck it is. And it blooms early in the season.
Two things to say on what you've just said is one, I read that somebody went and bought some and that they thought they were really super expensive.
And they're not cheap.
And why are they not cheap?
Because being that it's a perennial, let's call it perennial flower. People try to propagate them from the seed. After the flower goes and the petals drop and all that, you get seed heads from it. You let them basically go, you cure them. And then you go ahead and try and drop them into the ground. And you don't notice anything growing. You think it's been a failure. Those seeds are going to germinate, but they're not going to look anything like the original plant. Number two, it's going to take about 3 years before that plant looks like a very healthy plant that you can go ahead and split if you wanted to. So right now, if you're going to propagate those in a greenhouse and sell them in your garden centers, you got to use a lot of energy, first of all. You've got to use a lot of nutrients.
So it's a lot of overhead. To get to what we know as a healthy-looking plant today.
Well, most of them are started from cuttings, too. Kind of like cloning.
So a shortcut.
Yeah.
So number two on that is, and here's one of those oxymorons, is that you said go ahead and split it, divide it. I also read that hellebores can be fussy about being dug up and moved.
Well.
And to suggest it's just best to leave them where they are. But you're saying you can divide them.
Yeah.
So if you're saying that, there's an oxymoron. When do you divide them? When do you say it's safe to divide?
The best time to divide them is when they're done with their spring growth. The new growth. They're going to establish the root base. They're going to establish new foliage. They're going to establish, obviously, the new flower. Once that's done, because they won't tolerate the heat. I mean, they'll tolerate it, but they won't bloom during it. So when the blooming is done, then you could dig around the outer perimeter of it at the drip line. And what's a drip line? That's where the outermost portion of all those flower leaves are on the flower. And then you go ahead maybe an inch or two and then pop that out of the ground. Now, you can leave that as it is and just transplant the whole thing somewhere else. But most people enjoy taking those and then loosen up the soil. Is that the word I'm looking for? No, just, you know, kind of take your hand and lightly reach right at the root system by the crown and slowly separate it. And then you go ahead and drop each one of those into the ground. Now, mind you, there's going to be a little shock. That's something that you should anticipate. Wilted leaves. It's not going to look too healthy right away. But the next season, I think you're going to notice some really cool looking results from it.
So if you're nervous about it, is it better to do it in the fall?
I would not do it in the fall. You got to get those roots to reestablish themselves. And in the fall, they're starting to go dormant. And so you don't have any guarantee with what the elements. They'll survive the cold. They're a cold-blooming plant. They'll survive this area between zones 5 and 9. And you can get them to grow pretty darn well and pretty. I just wouldn't do it in the fall. If you're willing to do it, I'd do it late spring when they start to lose their petals, or early summer. Pop it out, split it, drop it in the ground, give it a little bit of non-invasive nutrients. Let's say, what do you got over there at your wife's store? You got that Hollytone it'll like. Plantone it'll love also, but there's the mycorrhizae that's in there to help to stimulate the root growth again.
Well, if you're saying it's an evergreen tone might be nice for it too.
Yeah, they like acid in the soil. Yeah, most of the evergreens like the azaleas, the rhododendrons, and the holly. Most evergreens do like the acid-based fertilizer.
So Hollytone would be just as good.
Yep.
When you talked about a single plant or planting a group of them on the hillside, and I said, you know, a group of them like a ground cover, if you're going to mess around with varieties in there, I understand you have to be careful with, since they self-sow, that you're going to get a crazy number of different types after about 3 or 4 years when they come up and...
Well, yeah, if you're going to move them in different places, but the standard colors that they basically come in are pink, red, yellow, purple, and white. Now, that's the common colors. They've hybrid them now with a totally different type of cultivation. They've got really neat-looking flower bases to them, but one thing that I found out, be very careful. Because when they've done that to coneflower, for instance, they basically hybrid those to the point where they would give you pastel colors. And I thought that would be so cool and so neat. They end up retorting back to the original coneflower. Mm. And I'm talking the original, not the pink, not the white, but the original is the yellow, bright yellow. It almost looks like a black-eyed Susan, but they come back year after year. And some people consider them to be invasive. Well, not that the Lenten rose is going to be an invasive plant. If you get a hybrid that doesn't go, well, goes beyond the pink, the red, the yellow, the purple, and the white, you're going to have variegated colors and that sort of stuff. Don't be too terribly surprised if they retort back to the original colors.
I remembered something about the hillside planting and your rose, tight rose-looking bud hanging down. That hanging down protects them from frost damage.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
I knew there was
something about that hanging, and I was like, I just remembered. That helps them. I think they call it the nodding down or something like that.
I'll be darned.
That helps them.
That makes sense.
So a couple of other, you mentioned colors, long-lasting blooms. They also have some different shapes. And they have some speckled patterns, which I thought were pretty cool.
Well, that's the hybrid varieties that they're capitalizing
on. Right.
And they're still just as hardy. I'm just, you know, are you going to be able to find a whole bunch of them this time of year? I don't really know. I don't think so. They're a popular plant only seasonally. Everybody seems to want the hellebores.
It's like when we did the show last year about forsythias.
Yeah.
We did it because everybody walks in and says, well, what's that yellow one that's beautiful right now? And it's like, be patient. But we've got them. They're very limited. But
you know, the thing that you enlightened me to is that they've used them as ground covers also. And I thought they'd make a great, if you're going to plant them and use them as a ground cover, don't plant them any closer than 2 feet from the center of the crown. Because the plant grows 2 feet in diameter and it'll get about 2 feet high. Makes a great harbor for certain types of pollinators, doesn't it?
Well, you're spot on. Here he goes. And I've seen a lot of stuff about hummingbirds lately because they're migrating in or starting their trek. And they are a great source of food for hummingbirds.
Really?
And the bees love them because their nectar is apparently very rich.
Well, I'll be darned. Yeah, I never would have thought of that because generally we start seeing all that stuff in middle to the end of May and they're all over the place with the flowers in full bloom. But this is the early bloomer that these critters will basically be able to rely on for giving their nutrients. I did not know that. And I mean, you don't see the butterflies coming because it's going to be a little bit later. The bees, yes, yeah. Definitely.
You mentioned critters. Another nice characteristic for this plant is it's deer and rabbit resistant naturally.
Really?
Yes.
Did they say why?
No, I did not get the technical.
I'm just wondering. I mean, you know, they go for this, you know, anything that's just basically tender. I know the rabbits go after the early tender stuff. Once they harden, they don't bother with it. Now, the deer are going to go for a number of things. But you said this time they don't like the helleborus or the Lenten rose?
Yeah, they don't like it.
Well, okay, ladies and gentlemen, if you got deer problems, you'll plant those around. It's not going to ward them off, but they're just generally not going to eat it. That's correct?
Correct.
Okay.
They will not eat. It will not be eaten by wildlife.
When you say wildlife, that means the deer, the rabbit,
the deer and the rabbits.
Mostly herbivores.
Oh, my.
O'Rourke.
Herbivores not eating hellebores?
Ooh. Now you got me a little confused. You know what? You're right. A herbivore. No, wait a minute.
I'm going to copyright that before anybody says anything.
A herbivore is something that only eats foliage or plant life.
You said it. I just repeated it because it rhymed with hellebores.
Well, okay. But see, they're not going to, the herbivore is not going to eat the hellebore.
That's correct.
I am for once.
Isn't that what I just said?
I'm not sure. I wasn't listening properly. Now, are they hardy? I mean, meaning that you don't have to worry about things like disease or, let's just say, insects or anything of that nature?
Well, there's a couple little items relating to that.
Okay, I bet you did your homework on that, too.
There are some issues. There's a major disease that will hit the Lenten rose is the Black Death.
Yeah. Now, okay. That appears on the flowers and on the leaves also. It's kind of like a stripy, smutty thing. But what causes that, as well as now, they've also got a virus. They're susceptible to a certain kind of virus if you don't have well-drained soil.
But wait, what about this virus? What, this is the helleborus net?
Necrosis?
Virus. What is that?
It's a disease. It's actually a virus that's injected into the plant, and they don't use needles or anything, but they're from insects such as aphids. And they do the sucking. They stick their little needle-type mouths into it. They inject a fluid into the plant itself to make it easier for them to get the flow of nutrients that they need from it. It's kind of like a mosquito that causes the mosquito bite. They inject it into you, and then it makes the blood flow a lot easier for them to ingest. That's what it does with the aphids as far as the necrosis. Well, you can constantly be putting insecticides down to the point where it's not necessarily going to be working, because once you've got these aphids, it doesn't mean that you've got the necrosis, but you can culturally control them. Now, what I mean by cultural, that means that you can use natural insecticides if you want to, or you can just take your thumb and finger and put it under the leaf and squish the schmutz out of them. And just, you know, they're gone, they're dead. But watch those leaves. They'll have a tendency to start to wilt and turn to a golden brown. Once they turn to a golden color, cut those off and dispose of them. If you can, wipe the area off with alcohol so it doesn't, you know, make it susceptible to any other diseases.
And you mentioned wilt. There's a third.
The third one
enemy
is
to.
That's Fusarium. Now, Fusarium, Fusarium blight basically was the reason for the potato famine for we Irish, but that was in 1849? Yeah, something like that. But it was fusarium blight. Once you get it, it's kind of like a death knell for the plants. So if you see a powdery substance onto it, I mean, you could go ahead and play massive gardener that would go out to the garden centers, get yourself a fungicide just in case if you're not sure.
Try it first.
If the fungicide does not work, then I don't want you to pitch the plant. But take your pruners or your pruning scissors and wipe them off with alcohol, cut that off. Make sure that you don't make any contact with anything else. If you have a bag that you could drop it into, that'd be perfect. But after each cutting, wipe the blades of the pruners or the pruning scissors and shears off each time so you're not transmitting the disease each cutting.
Now, I remember this because somebody asked if coffee grounds can be beneficial to the Lenten rose because they say they're beneficial to the roses. And what I found is coffee grounds have an antioxidant and antimicrobial property, which tends to
inhibit.
It will help suppress the disease, such right. as the wilt.
Right. It helps. It's a natural nutrient, but it's also a natural pesticide. It's a natural fungicide. It's a natural all the way around, and it basically helps to establish even thicker roots, but also the top growth appreciates it too. It's not like you're giving it an injection of steroidal nitrogen at 40%. This is only going to be like about 1 to 10% at the most, but the plant basically will benefit from it when you give it slow. It's kind of like when you're in the sick bay, you can stay there for a while until you get better, but they slowly get you to a point where you're eating solids again. That's one of the benefits of the coffee. Not that it gets you to eat solids again. It's basically allowing the plant to perform the way it's supposed to.
It's the nutrients in the soil.
Yeah.
That the coffee is helping.
If you use the coffee, that will help it along with the holly tone. You're going to have yourself really a healthy-looking plant. And I don't want you to go out there and watch it every day, every hour of the day. You don't have to pamper it. What's the point? If you got to do that, why have those in your yard?
Right.
But they are going to be one of the first ones that are going to come up in the spring that's going to be beautiful, and you don't have to go and get yourself some bulbs like hyacinths and crocus and tulips to make sure you have a beautiful array of flowers every late winter, early spring. This is something, as an individual plant, it's going to give you that lustrous color, the drooping rose buds, the nice leaves, and it's going to give you a really cool-looking bud flower when it opens up about later on and, I want to take it, say, about tax day.
The one thing we also need to advise everybody on it, and maybe we should have said something before we started talking about pruning, there's a little poison in the sap. And you might want to wear gloves when planting, touching.
Well, if you have sensitive skin, yeah.
Yes.
It'll irritate the skin.
All parts of this plant, not just one little part.
No,
all parts of this plant contain the sap that will irritate your skin and is poisonous if you ingest it.
Well, yeah. Why? Now let me ask you this: why would you want to eat the leaf of a helleborus?
Well, there's always that one guy that tries something first.
How did we
know we could have iceberg lettuce and not die or something like that?
Oh, my God. I thought it was a mushroom.
So wrapping up the Lenten rose, I brought it up basically because of the time of the season.
Sure.
People can go investigate it further on their own.
Sure.
See whether, maybe they have the hillside that things have trouble growing on.
It's got to be well-drained soil, can't be clay.
Well, yes, exactly. But you had mentioned something in passing about not planting them too deep. There were a couple other planting things that you wanted to say.
Yeah, they don't want you to, they don't like being planted too deep in the soil or too high above the crown itself. The crown, now please remember, it's right at ground level where the container is that they've got them growing in. That is going to be ground level. It's going to be ground zero, perfect for the plant when you plant it. Now, a lot of schools of thought is don't go any deeper than a half an inch, bury that crown a half an inch, because it's just going to grow green. It's not going to produce flower. If you plant it too high, Once you get it into the ground and you pack the soil around it, you give it a good drink of water, you'll notice that the soil settles. You don't want that to stick above the ground any higher than a half an inch also. It's not really that technical. What you want to do is just to make sure that it's ground level when you're ready to walk away from it. That crown has got to be at ground level, or else it's just not going to bloom.
We keep going back to the hillsides because you find this very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to see that on the side of a hill, but it's got, like I said, it's got to be well-drained soil. Clay soils, it's not going to do well at all.
But there are a number of companion plants that this would look cool with.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll name a couple of them off, and you give me your cool, or maybe not cool. Snowdrops.
First ones you see blooming in the middle, in the late winter, early part of spring, they pop out in between the little melted snow portions where you still have snow. The little white flowers are gorgeous.
Crocus?
The same thing. It's just that that's an early bloomer. Doesn't get too much taller than about 6 to 8 inches, and it cascades outward.
And you got your standard daffodils.
Yep.
Phlox?
Phlox, we're talking the carpet phlox.
Right.
Not necessarily. You can put the perennial flower phlox in where it spires upward, but that's not going to bloom until later on in the season.
Right.
The ground cover phlox
is what they're talking
about
here.
The same time. And you can put this in there with it. It's not going to be invasive. Trillium also, but that's a wooded plant. So if you've got yourself a wooded area where it's going to give you that quote-unquote dappled sunlight, you can have the trillium growing in, and its blooming time is going to be almost identical.
So maybe you don't want them to fight too much.
No,
so
but then
maybe choose one or two others and
yeah, just randomly put them in there. Watch what happens after about 2 or 3 years. You're really going to appreciate it. Did you know that you could do that with a bleeding heart also? Now, the bleeding heart is usually one of the first blooming spring blooming plants. So when all the other ones start to fade a little bit, it's going to be the predecessor to the late spring, early summer blooms. So it will complement it as well with its neat foliage, with its teardrop blooms on it or heart-shaped. That's cool. All of these things with any type of, let's say, bulbs that you're going to put in, like your crocus, I think it's going to be something that's going to be way cool.
So let me get the bleeding heart straight again. That is a late spring.
It depends
bloomer.
On the variety. It's a late spring bloomer. It's not going to be an early spring bloomer,
okay.
But it's going to be blooming about the same time as the Lenten roses going to be.
As those start fading away, you said.
When they start to wane.
The bleeding heart's going to start kicking in.
Right.
So extend your blooming season on that hillside.
And then we can go into other plants that are really going to appreciate early summer, midsummer, late summer, and early fall. But that's something to talk about for 5 more podcasts.
I'm going to wrap this up by also just recommending that in the Midwest, these plants can handle full sun very well. Mike keeps saying dappled shade and sunlight, but in our zones, because of where they can be planted, our zone can handle full sun really well.
Now, why is it that our zone can do that? Scott, the 5-year rookie.
Well, because when it's blooming or when it's prepping, it's our winter, so it's not getting a hot sun.
Right.
So it can handle as much sun as we could give it at the tilt
at
of the earth.
At that time of the year. Bingo! This guy's really, all right.
Aye.
He wants to call himself the 5-year rookie. He's basically worked his way up the journeyman.
All right, everybody, I think that is going to wrap up Helleborus.
Lenten rose.
Even though it's a shade-loving plant, we've proven it likes Midwest sun.
It loves the sun, grows in zones 5 through 9 quite well. Later on in the season, when the sun starts getting hot, they're not going to bloom for you.
But they're going to be evergreen.
They are an evergreen. You're going to have that.
Barbra Streisand, right?
Sing the song, Scott. I'll leave you right now.
Ooh, that is tempting.
Maybe I should have shut up.
All right, everybody.
We'll see you later. What are you doing? What are you doing with that thumb?
Well, everybody's going to do their own homework on the Lenten rose, and you and I are going to walk away saying, green thumbs up.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Your Midwest Garden. If you like today's conversation, please share this podcast with friends and family. And don't forget to click on the subscribe button so you won't miss any future episodes. Plus, if you have any show topics you'd like us to discuss, head on over to our sponsor's Facebook page, which is Black Diamond Garden Center, and message them your topic idea. For all of us at Your Midwest Garden Podcast, I'm Michael Rourke, the Garden Guy. Hope you enjoyed today's conversation.